Let us now open ourselves to listening to the Passion of the Lord, even though we know the story, perhaps listening to it again this morning. The Lord may speak to us and call us to a deeper appreciation of the gifts that are ours because of that Passion of the Christ.
It was 2 days before the Passover and the Festival of the Unleavened Bread. The chief priests and the scribes were looking for a way to arrest Jesus by stealth and kill him. For they said,
"Not during the festival, or there may be a riot among the people."
While he was in Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at the table, a woman came with an alabaster jar of very costly ointment of nard, and she broke open the jar and poured the ointment on his head. But some were there who said to one another in anger,
"Why is this ointment wasted this way? For this ointment could have been sold for more than 300 denarii and the money given to the poor."
And they scolded her, but Jesus said,
"Let her alone. Why do you trouble her? She has performed a good service for me. For you always have the poor with you, and you could always show kindness to them whenever you wish, but you will not always have me. She has done what she could. She has anointed my body beforehand for its burial. Truly, I tell you, wherever the good news is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will be in remembrance of her."
Then Judas Iscariot, who was one of the 12, went to the chief priests in order to betray him to them. When they heard it, they were greatly pleased and promised to give him money. So he began to look for an opportunity to betray him. On the first day of the unleavened bread, when the Passover lamb was sacrificed, his disciples said to him,
"Where do you want us to go and make the preparations for you to eat the Passover?"
So he sent two disciples, saying to them,
"Go into the city, and a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him. And wherever he enters, say to the owner of the house, 'The teacher asks, where is my guest room and where I may eat the Passover with my disciples?' He will show you a large room upstairs, furnished and ready. Make preparations for us there."
So the disciples set out and went to the city and found everything as he had told them. They prepared the Passover meal. When it was evening, he came with the 12, and when they had taken their places and were eating, Jesus said,
"Truly, I tell you, one of you will betray me, one who is eating with me."
They began to be distressed and to say to him one after another,
"Surely not I."
He said to them,
"It is one of the 12, one who is dipping bread into the bowl with me. For the Son of Man goes as it is written of him. But woe to that of one by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been better for that one not to have been born."
While they were eating, he took a loaf of bread, and after blessing it, he broke it, gave it to them, and said,
"Take, this is my body."
Then he took a cup, and after giving thanks, he gave it to them, and all of them drank from it. He said to them,
"This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many. Truly I tell you, I will never again drink of the fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new in the kingdom of God."
When they had sung the hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives, and Jesus said to them,
"You will all become deserters, for it is written, 'I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep will be scattered.' But after I am raised up, I will go before you to Galilee."
Peter said to him,
"Even though all become deserters, I will not."
But Jesus said to him,
"Truly I tell you, this day, this very night, before the cock crows thrice, you will deny me 3 times.
But he said vehemently,
"Even though I must die with you, I will not deny you."
And all of them said the same. They went to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples,
"Sit here while I pray."
He took with him Peter, James, and John, and began to be distressed and agitated. And he said to them,
"I am deeply grieved, even to death. Remain here and keep awake."
And going a little further, he threw himself on the ground and prayed that if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. He said,
"Abba, Father, for you all things are possible. Remove this cup from me. Yet not what I want, but what you want."
He came and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter,
"Simon, are you asleep? Could you not wake 1 hour? Keep awake and pray that you may not come into the time of trial. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak.
And again he went away and prayed, saying the same words. And once more he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were very heavy, and they did not know what to say to him. He came a third time and said to them,
Are you still sleeping and making your rest? Enough! The hour has come. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand.
Immediately, while he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived, and with him there was a crowd with swords and clubs from the chief priests, the scribes, and the elders. Now the betrayer had given them a sign, saying,
The one I will kiss is the man. Arrest him and lead him away under guard.
So when he came, he went up to him at once and said,
Rabbi,
and kissed him. Then they laid hands on him and arrested him. But one of those who stood near his sword and struck the slave of the high priest, cutting off his ear. Then Jesus said to them,
Have you come out with swords and clubs to arrest me as though I were a bandit? Day after day I was with you in the temple teaching, and you did not arrest me. But let the scriptures be fulfilled.
All of them deserted him and fled. A certain young man was following him, wearing nothing but a linen cloth. They caught hold of him, but he left the linen cloth and ran off naked. They stood Jesus to the high priest, and all the chief priests, the elders, and the scribes were assembled. Peter had followed him at a distance, right into the courtyard of the high priest, and he was sitting with the guards, warming himself at a fire. Now the chief priests and the whole council were looking for testimony against Jesus to put him to death, but they found none. For many gave false testimony against him, and their testimony did not agree. Some stood up and gave false testimony against him, saying,
We heard him say, I will destroy this temple that is made with hands, and in 3 days I will build another, not made with hands.
But even at this point, their testimony did not agree. Then the high priest stood up before them and asked Jesus,
Have you no answer? What is it that they testify against you?
But he was silent and did not answer. Again, the high priest asked him,
Are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One?
Jesus said,
I am, and you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of the power and coming with the clouds of heaven.
Then the high priest tore his clothes and said,
Why do we still need witnesses? You have heard his blasphemy. What is your decision?
All of them condemned him as deserving death. Some began to spit on him, to blindfold him, and to strike him, saying to him,
Prophecy!
The guards also took him over and beat him. While Peter was below in the courtyard, one of the servant girls of the high priest came by. When she saw Peter warming himself, she stared at him and said,
You also were with Jesus, the man from Nazareth.
But he denied it, saying,
I do not know or understand what you are talking about.
And he went out into the forecourt. Then the cock crowed, and the servant girl, on seeing him, began again to say to the bystanders,
This man is one of them.
But again he denied it. Then after a little while, the bystanders again said to Peter,
Certainly you are one of them, for you are a Galilean.
But he began to curse, and he swore an oath,
I do not know this man you are talking about.
At that moment, the cock crowed for the second time. Then Peter remembered that Jesus had said to him,
Before the cock crows twice, you will deny me three times.
And he broke down and wept. As soon as it was morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and the scribes and the whole council. They bound Jesus, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate. Pilate asked him,
Are you the king of the Jews?
He answered him,
You say so.
Then the chief priests accused him of many things. Pilate asked him again,
Have you no answer? See how many charges they bring against you?
But Jesus made no further reply. So that Pilate was amazed. Now at the festival, he used to release a prisoner for them, anyone for whom they asked. Now a man called Barabbas was in prison with the rebels who had committed murder during the insurrection. So the crowd began to ask Pilate to do for them according to his custom. Then he answered them,
Do you want me to release for you the king of the Jews?
For he realized that it was out of jealousy that the chief priests had handed him over. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to have him release Barabbas for them instead. Pilate spoke to them again.
Then what do you wish me to do with the man you call?
They shouted back,
"Crucify him!"
Pilate asked them,
"Why? What evil has he done?"
But they shouted all the more,
"Crucify him!"
So Pilate, wishing to satisfy the crowd, released Barabbas to them, and after flogging Jesus, he handed him over to be crucified. Then the soldiers led him into the courtyard of the palace, that is the governor's headquarters, and they called together the whole cohort. They clothed him in purple cloak, and after twisting some thorns into a crown, they put it on him, and they began saluting him.
"Hail, King of the Jews!"
They struck his head with a reed, spat upon him, and knelt down in homage to him. After mocking him, they stripped him of the purple cloak and put his own clothes on him. They led him out to crucify him. They compelled a passerby who was coming in from the country to carry his cross. It was Simon of Cyrene, father of Alexander and Rufus. Then they brought Jesus to the place called Golgotha, which means place of the skull, and they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it. And they crucified him and divided his clothes among them, casting lots to decide what each should take. It was 9 o'clock in the morning when they crucified him. The inscription of the charge against him read,
"The King of the Jews."
And with him they crucified two bandits, one on his right and one on his left. Those who passed by derided him, shaking their heads and saying,
"Ah, you who would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself and come down from the cross."
In the same way, the chief priests, along with the scribes, were also mocking him themselves and saying,
"You saved others, you can't save yourself. Let the Messiah, the King of Israel, come down from the cross now, so that we may see and believe."
Those who were crucified with him also taunted him. When it was noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m. At 3 o'clock, Jesus cried out with a loud voice,
"Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani?"
Which means,
my God, why have you forsaken me?"
When some of the bystanders heard it, they said,
"Listen, he is calling for Elijah."
And someone ran, filled a sponge with sour wine, put it on a stick and gave it to him to drink, saying,
"Wait, let us see whether Elijah will come to take him down."
Then Jesus gave a loud cry and breathed his last, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. Now when the centurion who stood facing him saw that in this way he breathed his last, he said,
"Truly, this man was God's son."
There was also a woman looking on from a distance. Among them were Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James the younger, and Joseph and Salome. These used to follow him and provided him when he was in Galilee. There were many other women who had come up with him to Jerusalem. When evening had come, and since it was the day of the preparation, that is, the day before the Sabbath, Joseph of Arimathea, a respected member of the council, was also himself waiting expectantly for the kingdom of God, went boldly to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Then Pilate wondered if he was already dead, and summoning the centurion, he asked him whether he had been dead for some time. When he learned from the centurion that he was dead, he granted the body to Joseph. Then Joseph brought a linen cloth, and taking down the body, wrapped it in the linen cloth, laid it in a tomb that had been hewn out of the rock. He then rolled a stone against the door of the tomb. Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, saw where the body was laid.
The hour is a little late, but I do want to share one thought with you that came to me while I was reading the gospel again this week in preparation for today. You know, if we look at the way we celebrate entries of triumphal people in our culture, what comes to mind are the processions of weapons through Tiananmen Square in China, and by the Kremlin, where they pass through, they use their atomic weapons and their big tanks and all these militaristic kind of expressions to talk about their power. And all the way through history, if we look at how triumph has been presented to the populace, it usually has to do with military might, defeat of enemies. In fact, in the early days of our history in Western civilization, they used to parade as slaves the people who had been conquered, and they always brought back lots of booty, lots of treasures and things that they took from the company or the country that they had captured or conquered. And that was a sign of celebration. It was a reason to be really uplifted, knowing that we had the power. And even in today, you see parades where one rides on a horse above the people to kind of mark the point that I am the person in position who has really done something for you, and I am to be honored as well. And I thought about Jesus. Jesus was coming in as a spiritual leader. He certainly was expected by many to be the Messiah. And the messianic hope at the time had a number of different expressions. One of them was a hope that he would be a military leader. Like King David ahead of him, he would be able to conquer people and put Israel back on the map, being a really a central part of the universe, a very powerful part. Another hope was that he would be a prophet who was able to critique the culture around him in a way that would call people to a reunion with God, to a newness of life and a whole different experience of themselves as faithful people, following the law, following the temple, and doing everything they were supposed to do. There were others as well. One was a Zionistic Messiah who was going to ensure that Israel would remain one of the major nations in the universe. In fact, if you read the scriptures, Zion hopes that Israel will be at the top of the mountain and all the nations will come to worship to be a part of the Zionistic community. Jesus comes into town, if he wanted to, could come on a stallion of some kind to mark his power. He could have ridden a camel, which is pretty much the automobile of the day, and sign himself too as someone of wealth and status, because to have a camel, to own a camel, meant something really important in your life. But he chose the foal of a donkey, the child of a donkey, that had never been ridden before, and I think for one special reason. Unlike the people who march in above the crowd and look down at the crowd, sitting on a small donkey that can't move too fast, he would be able to make eye contact with all the people he was passing. He could look at them, and they could look at him. And just as any one of us, when you make eye contact with a person, you know you have attention, you know that you are being seen, you know that there is at least respect for the moment of who you are. There's an acknowledgement that indeed you are important enough to be the focus of my attention. And I think he did that for a reason, because one of the things that Jesus was able to do, however we want to spin the passion story, however we want to spin out the resurrection story, there's the thing on National Geographic tonight, Killing Jesus, you know, there's a lot of movies that are going to be coming out about Jesus and the gospel, and all of them are going to miss a point. All of them go for the drama, they go for the cures, they go for the hype, and they go for all this power and intrigue, and it's all wonderful theater. But if you don't get the point, then you're missing something extremely important. And the point is that God is looking into your eyes, and God is saying to you, you are loved with no questions asked, with no reason given, with no conditions on how you maintain it. You are loved. That's the one thing he came to teach us. that we are loved. And he did so by watching and showing us, as we watch him, to come to an understanding of who he is in the presence of God. He preached the kingdom. The kingdom of God is not something later. It's not something in heaven, which is what religion has done to it, thrown it out there as pie in the sky so that we can control what you do down here to make sure you're working with us and therefore getting your way there. There's no payment plan. There's no change of redemption for rewards or rewards for punishments or rewards for suffering. That's all what we have done with it. The simple, basic truth is that the universe is alive in God. God is the universe. Science can't say that. Only the eyes of faith can say that. Jesus became aware of the universe of God. And he said, and this, brothers and sisters, is for you. He died because he was saying that. Not to make it happen, but because he was saying that, and the people of the temple and the people of the culture thought he was, first of all, a heretic, secondly, a subversive to the government, and that's why they killed him. Because he was teaching something that was so outrageous and so freeing. Because that love is free. You don't earn it. You don't have to win it over. You don't have to convince God of anything. You are. You are a part of the love of God. Our job is to become like little children. You hold a baby in your arms for the first time. And I've said this before, when you look into the eyes of a newborn infant, you are looking at the eyes that have just left God's presence. And when you look into those eyes, through all the months before they start learning what's right and wrong and what's good and bad and what you expect and what you don't expect, until they get all this baggage involved, when you look into the eyes of a child, you see nothing but openness, awe, and love. That gets drummed out of us very quickly because we have to socialize. We have to fit in. We have to make people ready for the big system. The truth is, we need to unlearn if we want to really understand the kingdom. We need to unlearn a lot of the stuff that we have learned and taken on in our lives as this is what God expects, this is what is right, this is what is wrong, these are the good people, these are the bad people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and understand that we live in God, the universe God. And when we talk about Christ, we're talking about the universal Christ, not the Jesus for the Jews and not the Jesus for the Christians. We're talking about the Christ for the universe. Because his message was not about living every day, following the rules. His message was about being vulnerable to a God who says nothing else but I love you and trusting it. Never second guessing it. Never allowing it to be altered or changed. To live as people who are loved by God. If I know I am loved by the universal God, what do I have to bring to the world? How would I perceive the world? How would I understand the meaning of life? How might I be able to stand back from the world and suggest perhaps there's a better way? How might that change my whole way of thinking? That's the message. He came on a donkey so he could look everybody in the face and let you know that you are loved by a God whose love is totally unconditional. It's a gift. And as a gift is received, so should it be given to the world we touch. As we go through the next few days of Maundy Thursday and Good Friday and come to Easter, May that somehow give us a platform from which we may enjoy the process, but also find transformation within each one of our lives. May we truly be people of Easter hope. That was his message. Amen.